OPOP Radio.
What's going on, guys? I find myself in Times Square in New York City, a place I despise. Living in New York City, I try to avoid Times Square at all costs. It's really strange. Everyone that comes to New York to visit, they all end up in Times Square. It's a tourist trap. I personally don't understand why you would go to this great city of ours, New York City, and then spend most of your time in Times Square. Although, I must say, if you do find yourself in Times Square, search out the women that have their boobs painted. It's amazing New York City allows this. Basically, women, topless. They disrobe early in the day, and then you got these artists, these guys that paint up their boobs all nice, and then they just walk around. They're not fooling anybody, but they make a shitload of money because all the tourists come and take their pictures with the ladies. Beautiful, beautiful ladies. So I guess that part of Times Square is worth it. Avoid the characters. Avoid the characters. They will come up to you all friendly, and your kids will be excited because they'll see Mario Brothers and Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse and the rest of the characters. And you're like, oh, cool, I'll snap a quick pic with the characters. And then you try to walk away, and they pretty much harass you until you give them money. Nothing is free in New York City. Can't wait to be through Times Square. Just saw the Naked Cowboy. He's been here forever, singing his song in his dumb underpants. I want to make fun of the guy because he's been at it a long time. I figured his body would be starting to fall apart by now, but that's simply not the case. He's still in good shape, so we'll give him a pass. Just on the outskirts of Times Square. I'm right under where they dropped the ball New Year's Eve. I gotta get a video element for this podcast. But basically, people will come to Times Square New Year's Eve really early in the morning just so they can see the ball drop. And then the NYPD kicks them out immediately. And you can't leave your spot. You get corralled in. And most of these people, they end up wearing Depends or just peeing in their pants just to keep their position, just so they can ring in the new year. I should mention that we're on our way to Jack Dempsey's, a great little bar, and I'm going to be meeting James S. Murray. Murr. You know who he is. He's one of the stars of Impractical Jokers. That show continues to just be a monster for those guys. Anyway, Murr wrote a book called Awaken. He wrote this book 14 years ago. Yeah, 14 years ago, before Impractical Jokers. He dabbled in writing and came up with Awaken. And then he shopped it around to all these publishers, and the story goes that he couldn't get a meeting with anybody. So he shelved the damn thing. Matter of fact, he would send this book out to a lot of places, publishing companies, and they would return it unopened. So you fast forward, the guy shelves the book for 14 years. Now he's a big star on Impractical Jokers. He's like, man, I know this is a good book. So he started taking meetings again recently, and they bought the book immediately. So we're going to talk to him about his book, and it's getting great, great reviews. See if this guy will play a little something for us. Let's go. Let's do this.
I'm gonna call the cops on you here to get some
money. Why are you calling the cops on me? I got cash.
Lady over there. Coming over and talking about, hey, you can't even stop playing.
Oh, she's mad at you, bro.
Called him in the dances. So you part child, just evil thoughts. See Matthews.
All right. What's your name, sir?
Jesus Christ Servant.
All right, go see him in Times Square. Here's your fiver, brother. Here's your fiver. That was just a bunch of noise, man. God damn, I thought I was going to hear something cool. Not going to front. That sucked. It started out with him yelling at a lady across the street. She's saying, you know, turn that racket off. And I was on his side. I'm like, what the hell? No, I like when they play the buckets. And then I listened to him for what, a minute there. And I got to tell you, I'm on the ladies' side. That was awful. Hey, man. Who are you?
I'm a filmmaker.
You're a filmmaker?
Yep.
What's your film?
What do you call it? I run a company called Blind Raven Productions.
Okay.
Our upcoming short is After Downfall. We're actually shooting on a Zoom tonight, though.
Are you really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, because I noticed you noticed my Zoom.
Yep, you got the H6 there.
See, they used to notice me.
Well,
and now they're noticing my equipment.
I noticed you, too. Who are you?
That's what I mean. They used to not have to ask. I used to be really famous.
Oh?
And now I'm walking around with a Zoom in Times Square.
All right, well.
Do you remember the Opie and Anthony show?
Yes.
I'm Opie.
Ah, it's nice to meet you. Give me a minute, I'll get you a business card. Are you on your way to somewhere?
Yeah, I'm interviewing James S. Murray.
Oh, okay. I don't know who I'm going to be interacting with, but I'm covering a show at the Public tomorrow.
Oh, so you know who he is?
Yes.
Of course, Mara from Impractical Jokers.
Yes.
All right, give me a card. I got to get out of here.
Yep.
Good luck with your film.
Thank you. Here's my personal card. It was
Ooh,
nice to meet you.
Ooh, Candace Hope Goldberg.
Yep.
All right, thank you, Candace. All right. Oh, God. Why do I do that to myself? There was a time I couldn't walk these streets. Oh, I just gave myself the hiccups. And now I get acknowledgement. The lady looked at me. I'm thinking, oh, there you go. She knows who I am. She remembers me. Turns out she was impressed that I'm walking around with a Zoom. Oh, brother. Enjoy that one, you haters. Enjoy that one. We're moseying along. It's hot as balls in New York City. That's how much I like Murr. I was at a beach where it's a lot cooler, nice ocean breeze, fishing, enjoying my time with my wife and my kids. And I had the opportunity to come into the city just to interview Murr. I said, yeah, I can't pass on that opportunity. So here we go. All right. Everybody in a hurry in New York City. I gotta tell you, the one thing you notice these days when you walk in New York City is the smell of marijuana pretty much everywhere. I mean, we are so close to having it legal. At this point, they aren't even gonna stop you. Unless you get a cop that's just having a bad day. They understand the whole culture is changing.
Opie, don't forget to pause while you're crossing the street.
The wind picked up there. I got really paranoid.
A little windy.
I don't want Joey yelling at me.
Opie, do you hear me, brother?
Greg, the wind. Greg, the wind.
Greg, what the fuck?
All right, Joey, I'm trying. But yeah, man, you smell marijuana pretty much everywhere, every time you walk the streets. And we're getting really close. Crimes Against Humanity, Cover-Up Conspiracy by Leon Panetta. Leon Panetta, war criminal, torturer, illegally targeted me. He targeted you? What happened? Are you walking right through me? Wouldn't you want some attention for your cause, ma'am? And then on the back it says John McCain is almost dead. Okay, then. Coming upon a lady. She didn't look homeless or that crazy, although she's got signs on baby strollers. I read the signs for you. I'm thinking, okay, this is a great opportunity to talk to her about what Leon Panetta did to her. And she nodded, yes, he did all those things to me. And then proceeded to push her baby strollers right through me. Rude and rude. We continue our interesting walk to Jack Dempsey's to interview Murr from Impractical Jokers. Got some guy tapping against a building here. Oh, whoa, a lot of homeless people around here. Lady on the sidewalk with a bunch of cats.
Look at the cats.
That was 12 in your dental. You tasted dead, so it wasn't a threat. Hot non-7 prime ready. Do. Hot non-7 prime ready. Ace. Hot non severed bomb ready. Do. American dream. Gonna need dusty roads for this. I come through in that truck from Fred Sanson. Call me the junkyard dog. Hop out picking the fro, flea la Lamont. Making a grown woman heart stop. Long enough to hop in the truck, straight to the telly. My dad ain't gonna let me smash in the crib. Plus, I don't need a round greedy and my daddy when they drinking. Have a washing dishes up in there. Brother B in the truck like I'm on an Autobahn coming off the FDR. And your bitch thinking I'm X. Heart's going down. How I beat the pussy up like she was Faith Evans and I was big. Front like you can't feel me. Told her get the close mirror and check your neck. Ray told you to protect your shit. We blow up your project, take all your assets. I'm ODB status. Me and Mariah, camouflage bat on the end of Biscuit. Don't get it twisted. Your bitch seen me in front of the show. And with the same 8:30, baby, I got your money. And you still handcuffed. Cause you couldn't visualize it was me on the red carpet sparkling with all my dog. Get admired, everybody in your style. Especially Ye, he gave me 2 thumbs up. Skillin' Ebert, how well my socks match my shirt. Told him I got that for Pops and Boomerang. So I got a bang, 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 all the Pu-Tang rhymes. Due to my color coordination. See when I bring in my girls for my date. It's like I came in with Team USA. Cause they all seem to have been American something. Italian American, Japanese American, Albanian American, Afghani American, Chicana American, Russian American, Colombian American, Native American, African American, Chinese American, Vietnamese American, Armenian American, German American, Irish American, American Jewish, more or less Haitian American. So you know it was a bunch American. Yo! Hot non-seven, rhyme ready. Hot non-seven, rhyme ready. Ace. And my girl know my life like Lil Uzi Vert.
Damn, bro, what's your name?
My name Kenny Cole, a.k.a. Harlem.
That is some good shit.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah. Cheers, buddy. I'll see you again.
Who are you, son? Who are you?
I do a podcast. Opie Radio.
All right, cool. Shout it out, Opie Radio.
All right.
Cole, you heard me? Harlem.
And how do they get a hold of you?
I'm out here every day, 34th and 6th Street, man.
All right, there you have it. All right, brother. Thank you. I got to go. Respect. Wow. Wow, that was kind of cool. I was a little scared to walk up to him. He was just tapping up against the building. Gave it a shot. And I let that go long because I didn't want to stop him. And then the other part of me was thinking, you know what, this is pretty good. So there you have it. This is just a regular stroll in New York City. I'm so happy that I could start recording this more. I just love walking the streets and seeing what's out there. And just making it up as I go along. Wow, this guy's going through the light and everyone's pissed off pointing at him. Right up the block here is Jack Dempsey's, where I'm going to meet Murr. I think he wants to be called James S. Murray now that he's an author, from Impractical Jokers, talking about his new book called Awakened. This is the Opie Radio Podcast. I'm at Jack Dempsey's. I love this place. And I'm hanging out with Mike. You don't know who Mike is yet. I should explain. Your voice has been heard on the podcast here and there. And Westwood One has officially hired you to help with the Opie Radio podcast. So, Mike, congratulations and welcome aboard.
Thank you, sir. Today's actually day one.
Day one, really?
Day one of my second job.
Even though you were working for free for the last month for me.
I was, and I thought not getting married, not having kids, I only need one job, but apparently I need 2 jobs now.
And I look forward to, I don't know, let's say 3 years from now, you hating my guts.
Well, that's the formula, right? You love you, always on, you're a big fan of Opie, and then you hate him.
And then you hate him when he can't do anything for you anymore. I guess some of that stuff is my responsibility, but not all of it, you sons of bitches.
You know what? The first step is admitting it, Opie. You're doing a great job admitting it.
Right, relax. I did more good than bad. I can guarantee you that. Anyway, we're waiting for James S. Murray from Impractical Jokers. I can't wait to talk to him. It's been a while. Is that him right now?
He's walking down now.
He's walking going, what did I get myself into?
And he brought a guest.
What's going on, buddy? It's nice and cool in here, right? I kind of just started already, if that's all right with you. What's going on, man?
What's up, buddy?
It's been a while.
It's good to
see you. Give me a hug. Here, sit down.
All right, I'm coming.
We're in an empty bar. What floor is this, Mike? Like the fourth floor?
Third floor. At Jack Dempsey's.
Yeah.
36 West 33rd Street, around the corner from the Empire State Building.
How's things, James?
That's awesome, dude. I got to start at the beginning of this. I got to start by telling you.
Yeah.
And I think I've said this to you before.
Yeah.
For we've been on TV for what, 7 years now?
Yes.
You have always, from day one, been such a nice guy to us and treated us well and give us opportunities when we never had it. Seriously, that means a lot to me. Like, from the first season, or second season, whenever we first got onto your show, we were like, you know, you're just so nice to the guys and I, and
right.
That really means a lot to me. And
oh,
you
right
clearly
on.
Knew the show and watched the show, too.
I watched it from day one, and I couldn't believe how cool it was. I enjoyed it a lot, and that was before anyone was watching, my friend.
I know, that's
and
what I'm saying, like from day one.
I said, we got to get these guys on. This is very unique and different. So, how's your summer going?
Good, man. It's so hot.
Yeah.
So hot. Yeah, it's like, you know,
beer?
Do we have, like, drinks? We can get drinks?
You want a beer?
No, it's, you know, you have, like, a Cosmatini. You're like, no, I'm kidding. I'll do, like, Coca-Cola is fine.
Why are you kidding about that?
No, okay, I'll take a Cosmo if they have it.
No, I like fruity drinks. Please tell me you like fruity drinks.
I mean, if you're serving fruity drinks, I'm the king of fruity drinks.
Why is that a bad thing to admit?
It's
that,
not.
Okay,
it's
thank
not.
You.
This is 2018. We can do whatever we want.
Because everyone else around me goes, God, that looks really, really good. And they're drinking some lame-ass beer, some IPA they don't even like because they want to look manly. And
that's
I'm sitting there enjoying a stupid drink that's very colorful with straws and all sorts of stuff popping out of it.
And I have a similar quality. We don't look manly. Look at us.
Well,
look at me.
That's why I'm growing the beard.
I'm what they call a twink. The guys on the show joke that I have the body, I have the frame of a twink, but the hair of a bear. Like
right.
I have a back hair. And, you know?
Oh, you got the back hair?
I was born with hair everywhere except my head.
I finally started ripping that shit out, brother.
Really?
Are you ripping out the back hair
yet?
Yeah,
I'm getting the, thank you, buddy. I'm getting the laser in the chest now.
Oh, you're doing the laser?
I did the laser in the back, and the back looks great. Because, you know, I got the Sicilian blood, you know?
Yeah.
The chest is the most painful thing I've ever been through.
It's not fun.
No.
I actually do what's called a summer shave down. I shave everything because I'm also very hairy.
Yeah.
And the back, I go to a very lame ass Asian place.
Yeah.
And they rip that shit out, and it's not fun. And I scream.
Oh, you do the waxing?
Oh yeah,
dude.
I scream the whole time. I videotape them. They get nervous. They leave the room, and they get the manager to come in and make sure everything's okay.
That's great.
Because the noises I make. And
I'm afraid that places like that are secretly taping you and selling that footage overseas.
Why?
You know?
Why are you?
Because people are into that stuff. You know, you hear all these stories.
But why are you worried about being secretly taped? By now, you should just be used to
well,
that, right?
Well, I told you when you guys reached out to me about this.
Yeah.
And you said, oh, we can meet anytime you're around your schedule. I was like, you're full of shit. I'm getting punished in the show. I didn't believe it.
Well, the best part up, I said, Murr, what's the best time for you? Tuesday or Wednesday? If you have to do Thursday. He's like, okay, Wednesday. I said, anytime you want. He goes, really? 6 o'clock. I said, okay. He goes, okay. I'm like, he goes, I need the bar to be kind of close to downtown. I'm like, Jack Dempsey's. He goes, bro, is this a prank?
Seriously.
I'm like, no, why? He goes, that was way too easy.
It is. Jack Dempsey, it's one block from the 2-3 train. I'm right one block from the 2-3 train. I was like, this is bullshit.
And here we are in an empty bar. It's a nice spot, though. I really enjoy hanging out here. So do we call you James S. Murray now that you're an author or what? Or do you still go by Murr?
My friend, you can call me whatever you'd like.
Your story about the book is amazing.
It's the crazy thing is, it's the same story as Joker's. I mean, you know the story of Guys and I. We're Staten Island guys. We didn't know anybody in the business. We had no contacts, no cousin, no uncle that worked for True TV.
Right.
We weren't cast. We didn't audition, right?
Right.
We just failed for a long time until we finally succeeded and created something good and sold the show.
But how'd you sell the show? What were you guys doing right before you sold the show?
So we struggled for years to get ahead, years. And then eventually we started saying, you know, improv's not working for us. So we switched over to sketch comedy on the internet, right? And our sketch comedy got noticed by NBC. And we won some money, and that got us in the room with a production company that was repped by an agent that we hit it off with. And every other agent for the previous 10 years had turned us down.
Of course.
And that got us in the room with an agent who we liked. And then so I saw the opportunity. I started pitching him TV shows. And I latched on to him. And then he sent me out to production companies to pitch. And that got me my job at a company called North South, which makes the show. And they hired me to work in development. And then I worked there for 12 years and ran development for the company for 12 years. And along the way, sold a lot of shows, sold Impractical Jokers. And the guys and I just... we were at the point in our careers where we were ready to walk away from it all, you know? Because the guys were like, the guys were settled into their lives. Right. Honestly, we were mid-30s. Q was a fireman. Sal owned a bar at that point, and Joe was like the top salesman at this baby store company. He sold baby shit. And the crazy thing is, he didn't even have a baby at that point, so he was just a weird middle-aged guy selling stuff to women who were like, okay.
You know? That's creepy. That's creep shit right there.
So, and then the book is the same story. I wrote it. It's crazy. I wrote it 14 years ago. I spent a year. I had no job. I spent a year writing the book. And I had this idea in the subways, you know, of New York City. You know, like the trains, it doesn't happen too much anymore. But back in the day, you'd be riding alone late at night. You're in a car by yourself going back to Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. And the car would disconnect from the third rail. Right. And suddenly you're plunged into blackness and silence. There's no air conditioner going either. You're like, holy fuck, this is crazy.
It's pretty awesome.
It's terrifying, though, you know?
I think it's awesome, though. I love all that dirty shit in New York City. And every once in a while, when you're on a really, really hot subway and everyone is miserable and sweating, and then the lights go off and you don't know what the heck to expect next, it's kind of exciting.
It's this unique...
I don't want it to happen every day.
No. It's this unique New York experience. I don't think most people in the world understand what that's like unless they live in a big city with a huge transportation system like this.
Was that the spark for the book?
Yeah, that was literally commuting home drunk many nights from like 4 a.m. I'm in a car by myself going 2 hours to get back to Bay Ridge, and I would have these experiences. And I was like, this is a setting for a horror movie. So anyways, I spent a year writing Awakened. And at the end of the year, I sent it out to every publisher and every literary agent in New York City. Everyone, the little ones, big ones, and it got returned to me unopened by 100% of them. My query letters, my manuscripts, unopened. I was like, I don't mind failing if it sucks.
Right.
But to not even be considered, you know?
I mean, what they should do is at least open it and maybe spill some coffee on it at least before they send it back to make you feel good about yourself.
Bend the page, like, okay, they read it, they didn't like it, I'll work on it a little more.
I love about this story, so that was 14 years ago.
14 years ago.
And one reason why they didn't open it up was because you weren't famous yet.
I had no connection. I was literally nobody, so it just got tossed aside.
And what I want to tell people, so 14 years later, and the guys on the show would joke about this.
Yeah, well, I mean, they tortured me for years. Yeah. On the TV show, of course, it tears apart all of our insecurities. It just exposes it to the world to see. So they, you know, Sal's running joke for years now on the show is, I call myself an author. He goes, yeah, well, my niece, who wrote a short story, is an author too, Murr. Yeah. You're in the same level professionally as my niece, you know, who wrote in crayon. And he was right until now.
Well, no, you had to take it, but knowing in the back of your head that you definitely wrote something that you felt like people would be interested in reading.
Back then, when I wrote it first, I was a huge fan of 24, the TV show.
Right.
And the best seasons of 24, the best episodes, you remember how exciting those episodes were?
Sure.
Like the best 12 episodes of a season of 24, they were amazing.
Yeah.
The book reads like, I gotta bring your damn book, I forgot. I'm gonna send you a book tomorrow, okay?
All right, please.
The book reads like the best episodes of 24. It just doesn't stop.
I did a lot of reading up on you and the book before I came here to Jack Dempsey's, and the reviews are unbelievable.
Thanks.
The fans are like, you know, every chapter ends and you gotta, I guess a lot of people are reading it within a day or two. They can't put this thing down.
It's one of those, I don't like books that, I haven't read a book since Of Mice and Men in 1992, you know what I mean? Like, summary high school. But I like books that just take you for the ride.
Yeah.
And you literally get to the end of the chapter like, I gotta keep going.
Right, and it's a horror.
And the chapters are like 4, 5, 6 pages each, so it's easy to go.
That is perfect, because when you're a reader, and even if you're reading a book you like and you just want to finish a chapter to go do something else and you start turning those pages, you're like 4, 5, 7.
Yeah, you see a 30.
There's 15 more pages before I can put this down and go do something else for a while. It's smart.
What's the worst book you ever read? Do you remember?
Wow, that is a great question. Worst book I ever read. I don't have an answer for that.
There's a book called Billy Budd.
Billy
Budd. Written by, I think, I'm gonna. Your listeners are gonna kill me. Is written by who's the guy that wrote Moby Dick? That's.
Oh, that's,
Steinbeck?
No.
Everyone pulls their phone out real quick.
Moby Dick is written by...
help me!
We're going to edit this so it sounds really good. Like, Moby Dick? Oh, it was so-and-so.
We all sound... No, give it in. We all idiots. And I don't know who wrote one of the bits for you.
And I do have an answer to your question, by the way, as I look up who wrote... Of course, Herman Melville.
Herman Melville, that's right. I did know that. I think he wrote Billy Budd, too. It's the worst piece of shit ever made. Oh, my God.
The worst book I ever read, and I did it for the radio show because we used to do a segment called Bad Guest, where we would purposely...
Is that what this is?
No.
It is a punishment. It is a punishment.
He was right all along.
It is. You tipped your hand. This is one of... Shit. Bad Guest. Here you go. Episode one, pilot episode of his new show, Opie's new show, Bad Guest.
Bad Guest. No. And I forgot the title, but it was something like Bro Bible or something.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a book about being a bro and all the things you need to do as a bro.
And remember, he changed all the words to make it bro, like bro on a brocation. He made everything bro, and you guys crushed him. Oh, you guys killed him.
You know what?
Was that the guy that I peed on his book?
And that's why I didn't bring a book today. you know what's crazy? When I used to work in TV development, they pitched us that as a TV show.
What do you mean?
That bro thing.
Really?
Bro Bible. Bro.
Oh, the
you know,
bro thing.
The
okay.
bro thing. Because then it spun out to a whole brand that they did online and everything like that.
Look, I think the guy did well. It just wasn't for us at the time. But with Bad Guests, we would have him on the phone. And I'd be going through his book, reading pages, sarcastically ripping the pages as we're interviewing him, and he's not picking up on these cues.
Yeah, he's not.
And then I would put the book in the wastebasket, and then I would, and then I would pee on it.
You'd take a fresh. You can't see this, but this is what's happening.
This must be one of my favorite stories because this is the second time I've brought it up on the podcast.
The book's a trilogy.
It is.
Oh yeah, yeah. No.
Do you have the other two books written already? Or no?
Yeah, well, I got the deadlines.
All right.
Yeah. No, we. Yeah. Well, I knew it was a trilogy when I wrote it, right? And so I have the plot outlines and the chapter breakdowns for book two and three. We started writing book two. We're maybe three chapters in. Did you know the plot of it? Do you want me to?
I do, but you should say for the people. Basically, there's a connection to the Z line, I think.
Yeah, you know the Z train right now in Manhattan ends at Broad Street. So in the near future, New York City extends that train and connects it with Brooklyn and Staten Island and Jersey City, right? So in the near future, New York City builds this new subway line called the Z train extension. It's like high speed, high tech. It was super exciting.
Yeah.
And the inaugural run of the train, on the train itself is the mayor's wife, 100 lucky New Yorkers that like won the lottery. When the train, and they built this underwater visitors pavilion, glass steel, literally underwater, the hub where all the trains meet.
Right.
When the train rolls into the underwater pavilion, all the passengers are missing. The cars are covered in blood. There's like a bloodied handprint on one of the walls. And the windows are shattered outward.
Wow.
So it's like, where's this glass? Where's the passengers?
Right.
And the mayor's wife is on the train. He's in a panic. It becomes a ticking clock race against time to see what's going on. And what you learn throughout the book is that what's going on underneath New York City is far more terrifying than anything you could possibly have imagined. It's a monster book. It's one reviewer described it perfectly. Aliens meets the taking of Pelham 123. Seriously, it's perfect.
Hey, you'll take that review, right?
Yeah.
How does the book end?
Bruce Willis was dead the whole time.
Yeah,
that's how the book ends.
It's interesting you mentioned that it can be terrifying under New York City. I've done some of that urban exploring.
Yeah.
And I was in the Amtrak tunnels where the mole people used to live.
Dude, that's right. Yeah.
I could take you there right now.
No.
Yeah,
you mean here in Penn Station?
It's up a little further.
Yeah. I don't want to give away the spot, but there's... You walk I can say this
How
much.
Do you get in? What's
I can say this much. So you walk along the West Side Highway in the gutter, and then there's...
I do that a fair amount.
I have a lot of the time on my hands. And then there's a couple holes. And
let me tell you something. 20 years ago, if you said there's a couple of holes on the West Side Highway, it meant something different. You know, that's where, right? 10th Avenue, 11th Avenue, that's where you go to pick up whatever you want.
I went with this guy who was selling a book about urban exploring, and he goes, look, before I come in, I wanted to take you to a couple places. I was in the Chrysler building, the Spire.
Yeah, sure.
Let me go back to the tunnels, and then I'll tell you about the Chrysler building. So anyway, Juliet, we have visitors today. So you go along the West Side Highway, there's a hole, and you slide into this hole, and then you kind of slide down some gravel.
What do you mean? It's on the highway or on the side?
The side of the highway. And the city keeps trying to plug up the hole with garbage and human feces, anything they can do to
deter them,
to deter people from doing this. So this guy knows about all this. He goes, I got a treat for you. So follow me. So we're walking along the West Side Highway. There's a hole. He removes some garbage bags or whatever. And next thing you know, there's a tunnel. I'm like, I'm just going to be trusting and slide through this thing. He goes, trust me. I slide through. I don't know if I'm going to fall to my death. He did go first, and I didn't hear him scream, so I knew I was okay. Okay, then we slid down some gravel, and we're in the middle of the Amtrak tunnels under New York City where the mole people used to
live. Don't tell me the exact block, but give me the range of blocks or that on the West Side Highway.
It's pretty much in the 70s.
In the 70s. Where the West Side Highway becomes a true highway.
But then you're down there, and it's a party. There's a lot of people down there because a lot of people know about this, and then... I
never get invited to the good parties.
And then we got these two tiny little flashlights. I'm scared shitless that I'm going to see rats all over the place. Trains are flying by every 5 minutes. Yeah, Mike knows about this.
Well, I'm an NYPD police officer, so I do it for real. But when I was 22, I just came on, and they took us down there. Like, hey, this is what happens. This is why you're never going to chase a perp in the tunnel. And they walked us through a tunnel, and there's people like legit just chilling there. You walk maybe. Just say 100, 200 yards. There's people there with electricity.
Well, not anymore.
They cleaned a lot out. City Hall, it was really bad.
Back in the 70s, and there's a documentary on it. I think it's called Mole People or something like that. And they estimated there were thousands of people living underground in these conditions. And they would break the pipes so they have water to take showers. They'd plug into electricity and cable and all that. And they lived underground. It was a huge community. The part we were in, it was completely cleared out. But you could see the remnants of when people used to live there. Beautiful art on the walls that no one will ever see.
Was it Amtrak or Metro North? What tunnels do you think you're in?
I thought it was the Amtrak tunnels.
Yeah, I don't
tunnels.
Know which one it was.
That's crazy.
And then the guy's with, he goes, hey, man, let's go say hi to the cat lady, because there are a few people that still live down there. And there was like this shelf, and it was really dark. And he's just, I forgot what her name was, but he's yelling to her, like, seeing if she was there.
Yeah.
So we could see her space. And supposedly she has a lot of cats down there with her. She wasn't there. But anyway, and then we walk all the way out to Grant's tomb around there, and you can finally get out of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Normally, that's where the trains come into the tunnel.
Yeah.
You know, underground at that point, and then we climbed up the hill up to Grant's tomb.
The crazy thing about this, I mean, you've been in this business a long, long time. You've interviewed thousands of people, right?
Yeah.
So you've seen snippets of different, the way people live their lives, you know, and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this guy lives his life the way he does, or that person does that. These people live, that's their life.
Right.
How crazy is that?
Right.
That's their life. That's their day-to-day. They've been doing it for decades, probably.
Yeah.
And they're going to die somewhere connected to that. It's so crazy, right?
Yeah. Well, these people, a lot of them back in the day, they would come up to the streets to do regular jobs. And then at night, they all weren't drug addicts. I mean, there was a lot of people with a lot of problems. But then there were also people that were just down on their luck. And this, you know, it was warm down there.
Sure.
It was free. And they had all sorts of manhole covers and other ways to get down underground in the city.
Yeah.
So when I heard about your book, I'm like, it brought me back. It brought me back. Because it is creepy down there. So I could just imagine, like, reading your book where now it's all monsters and all sorts of stuff
happening. So I have this idea. We've had guests on the show from time to time, right? And Gary Busey has been on the show a few times.
Love him.
And he's always on the show just to torture Sal.
Yeah.
And I always do it in a way where he shocks Sal. Sal has no idea. And Sal screams and runs from Gary Busey, right? Anyways, Busey's hysterical. You know, I love the guy. He's a believer in all things paranormal, supernatural, otherworldly. I mean, you know, he's all in. He believes he died at the, you know, he had regression therapy, believes he died at the Alamo, has seen his grave in Texas and so on and so forth. And he's all in. I'm the complete skeptic. Right, I don't believe in most anything at all,
right.
Except myself. No, I don't believe in anything. That's arrogant. I don't believe in anything, really.
Do you believe in ghosts?
No, come on. What are we doing? We all got cell phones. Where are the ghosts? Show up. They're not here.
I don't believe in ghosts.
But I'm also skewed because of TV development.
Right.
Like, I've sold a couple of paranormal shows in my time and worked on them. And they're not real. Those reality shows ain't real.
Allegedly.
Yeah. So,
no, I believe but anyways, you, but I got to say, you know, that's what you say.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
I believe they're not real either, but I'm just protecting myself from lawsuits and whatnot.
Got it.
Yeah, you got to worry about all that stuff. So.
Yeah.
No, the thing with ghosts, because when they have video of ghosts and pictures of ghosts, why are they wearing clothes?
I don't know.
No, I mean, seriously, why would a ghost have clothes on in the afterlife? long flowing gowns and stuff.
Where are they? I want to see a video of a ghost. Please, someone that's not photoshopped or like animated. And then, so the idea is this. I want to pitch a TV show with Busey and I.
Yeah.
It's like a buddy comedy reality show where him and I go into sewers or the whatever, like the most haunted places in America, and he's a believer and I'm not. And it's just us exploring these haunted places or these sewers. Because he's so big, too. He's like 6'8". He's a big guy, right? And I'm a petite, you know, twink of a man, as I said, right? It's just funny physically. And to see him in a sewer with me exploring a haunted sewer would be hysterical.
I would watch that show in a second.
Yeah.
All right. How many of you are screaming at your smartphone or whatever you listen on while a Georgetown graduate asked a cop and Opie for the name of one of the most famous authors of arguably one of the most famous novels of all time, at least in the top five? Yeah, me too. Ach, might be a good time to invest in a call-in line. Coming up, is Bigfoot still a thing? What does Opie know about the Chrysler Building that you don't? And can therapy fix broken relationships? But first, a word from Opie with our first sponsor, who just might be able to help you in this area.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company that lets you message a licensed therapist from anywhere, at any time. All you need is a computer with internet connection or the Talkspace mobile app. That means you can improve your mental health even if you've had trouble making time for it in the past. Very important to know. Can't imagine fitting anything else into your life? With Talkspace, therapy is as easy as sending your therapist a message. Get something off your chest whenever you need to. Talk about everyday challenges at work or at home. Just chat about life. There are no extra commutes, no leaving the office, and no judgments. Having a therapist simply provides you a designated person for you to talk to who is trained to listen and help you make positive changes. The Talkspace platform has over 2,000 licensed therapists who are experienced in addressing life challenges we all face. To match with the perfect therapist for a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, go to Talkspace.com/Opie and use the code Opie. That's O-P-I-E. Let me say that again because I know you guys are loyal. And you will support my sponsors, Talkspace.com/Opie, O-P-I-E. Use the code Opie, O-P-I-E, to get $45 off your first month and show your support. Talkspace.com/Opie.
Opie Radio.
Do you believe in Bigfoot?
I used to. You remember in
the '80s? Used to.
In the '80s, they had that great Mysteries of the Unknown or Time Life Mysteries and Unexplained books.
Yeah.
I had all of them. I love reading about it, but no, it's not real.
Well, what's his name came in to promote the Bigfoot show? The good looking guy. Look him up.
The one with $1 million to find Bigfoot.
Yeah. All right. So he comes in, and I couldn't help myself. I look him right in the eye, and I go, "So." Is the show taped? He goes, yeah. I go, all right, you didn't find Bigfoot. He wanted to kill me. And then he tried to play it. He's like, why would you say that? I'm like, look, man, if you found Bigfoot, no one's going to wait for the season finale of the Bigfoot show to tell the world that you found Bigfoot. That would be international news. He looked at me like, I hate you. I will never be back on your show again.
It was like $1 million challenge or something.
So
we kept that money.
So then this guy, after he took me through the tunnels, he goes, I got a surprise for you, but I'm waiting for the sun to kind of start setting. I'm like, all right. Long story short, he gets me to the Chrysler Building, and we walk in. He goes, just be cool and just follow my lead. I just had a kid. And I was only married a couple of years. And as I'm going through this, I'm like, what are you doing? You're going to get arrested, right? So we go into the Chrysler Building. He says something to the guards. And they go, all right, here's your passes, and lets him through.
What?
And next thing you know, we go up to, I forgot what floor, the highest you can go in the elevator. And all of a sudden, we get out, and we do a quick turn to the left into the stairwell. I'm like, what are we doing? And then we go up the stairwell. He knew exactly what he was doing. He knew how to get through some doors. Let's just put it that way. At one point, he said to me, Mike, earmuffs. Earmuffs, gotcha. Mike, you're still on the job. He goes to me, just stay where you are. I'll call you when I need you. I personally think he had some tools in his backpack.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. Now we're in some kind of like engineering room with a tiny red ladder. Tiny. It maybe was not even a foot across. And the ladder went up to a platform, then went up again to another platform, at least a couple hundred feet. Long story short, when you look at the Chrysler building and you see the last tiny window before it's a point, we were in that crawl space in the Chrysler building taking amazing video. And I'm like, oh my God, this is like one of the most amazing things I've ever done in my life. But I'm also thinking, you're an idiot. You're going to get arrested.
Sure.
You know, this was after 9/11.
Oh my God, you can't do that.
No, you can't do that. And then on the way down, he goes, we have one more stop. Or did we do it before? I think we did it before, but whatever. You know, the gargoyles?
Of course.
The famous gargoyles. Yeah. So we get to a floor. He knew that this space was empty. And it had an old observation deck. We climbed through a window. Now we're out outside of the Chrysler building in this old observation area where the cement is all just ripped up. There's no guardrails anymore. We're looking way down, and the wall itself is maybe only 4 feet high. This guy decides he has to go on the gargoyles as I'm filming him.
He's going on them?
I'll show you the video after the podcast. It's on my YouTube channel. And now I saw in my head him, it looked like he was slipping, and I'm like, am I gonna film this guy
dying,
you know, falling to his death? He goes up out on the gargoyle, and I'm losing my mind. I had the first panic attack in my life. I started having a panic attack. I'm like, I can't, what am I doing? I'm gonna get arrested. I think he kisses the head, now he's just sitting up there in a meditative
like
pose,
Batman,
right?
Sitting on the gargoyle.
And then we got past that, and next thing you know, we got out of the building, and we're walking past security, and I'm like, these guys have no clue. Idea what we just did upstairs.
That's crazy.
And then he told me how he got in. There's a whole community with this urban exploring where they figure out all these little things they could do to get past guards and stuff. He figured out there's a dentist in that building.
He's going for a dentist appointment.
He made it that this was his dentist. So he had an appointment, but we didn't go to see the dentist. We went in the stairwell and did all this stuff. That's how we got past security.
Wow.
And then
the old dentist trick, right?
Yeah, and then he calls me. I had to like stop hanging with him. He wanted to take me through other tunnels in the subway where he's like, you know, we have to count trains. And after the two goes by, we have 15 seconds to get to the other platform.
To run across, yeah.
Yeah, or the three's going to get us. Like he had this whole thing, all the math that other people figured out. And I'm like, I can't do this. Stuff. But he calls me like a month later because he finally he got caught. He went back into the Chrysler building and they caught him.
Really?
Yeah.
Finally.
So it was an end to that. But in the end, a happy ending. He didn't go to jail or any of that. I think he had to pay a little bit of a fine. But
They used to take people like press or things like that to the top of the Verrazano Bridge. The top spire, which is massively high. You know what I mean? And they don't do it anymore, but I always wished I got there or the top of the Brooklyn Bridge. How amazing would that be?
That would be amazing. Yeah. I love doing all that stuff as long as it feels safe. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, when I was thinking about you today and knew I was going to interview you about the new book, Awakened, it brought back these memories of me doing some of these explorings.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so, and 14 years later, it's
14 years later. So yeah, this time around was a little different. But it's still the same problems, right? Like, so I brought the book into a couple people that work with us, and one gentleman said, yeah, it's good, but I can't sell it. I was like, what do you mean you can't sell it? He goes, it needs to be polished up, and you know, people know you for comedy. They're not going to, you know, whatever. And I was like, those people are always around you.
Of
in
course.
Life, right? Always.
And
I was like, all right, you can't sell it, no problem. So I took the editor, the publisher out from HarperCollins myself directly for lunch. We hit it off, pitched them the book. They bought it the next Monday. That was it.
Wow.
That was that simple, you know? It's just like, you just got to get past. They're always in your life, these people that just, it's so easy to shoot things down.
Of course.
You know?
It happens no matter what you do because they don't know how to do this type of thing. So they feel like they have to put their hands around stuff to feel like, you know, they're I don't know, whatever. Yeah. I should shut my mouth.
You got enough trouble doing that.
And to the guys, kind of make funny after.
No, you know, it's funny.
What happened or did you make fun of them and say, hey, look, and just shove the book in their faces?
No, they've been really supportive, actually, of it. Truly, they have. But Q's the only one that read the book. He read the book 14 years ago, loved it.
Right.
Sal and Joe have never nor will ever read the book.
They still won't read it?
No, you know. Joe's joke was this. Joe and I used to be roommates, right? So I gave the book to Joe like a long time ago. I said, Joe, what do you think? He goes, I gave him like a month to read it. He goes, yeah, it was good. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, well, do you have any feedback, any notes, any, you know, something? I mean, you were my best friend. Come on, help me out. He goes, yeah, no, I liked it. I was like, all right, well, give me something, bud. Well, what didn't you like? He goes, well, you know, I don't like the middle. I was like, oh, okay, well, what in the middle didn't you like? He goes, the very middle. I said, Okay, a little more specific, but what's the very middle that you didn't like? He goes, the very middle word. I was like, the middle word of the book? He goes, yeah, I think you could have cut that word out. You didn't need it. I was like, what was the middle word? He goes, extraneous. I was like, I could have cut the word extraneous out, you asshole. So that's his running joke.
That is awesome. Yeah. You guys have been at it a long time, man.
Yeah, 8 years now.
You still get along?
Yeah. We had, it was interesting. We kind of went through... you know, gosh, as the show's grown and the tour's grown, we had these, like 2 years ago, we had this string where we were working together 7 days a week. We did like 2.5 months straight, not a single day off.
Yeah.
Because we tore on the weekends, you know? And just, it was, I think we reached a point like 1.5, 2 years ago where we kind of like, what do we do? Like, our friendship has become, we are dearest friends, you know, but our friendship has become so much about work.
Right.
Like, it's literally, that's all we're talking about. It's overwhelming. And, that kind of snapped us back into reality, and we realized that we needed to readjust. And I think that's why we started doing different things too. So we still have Jokers. The movie, of course, comes out next year. We just shot it, and the tour is growing. But we all kind of like, for our own sanity, so, you know, Joe's doing a ton of charity work. Q's just wrote a graphic novel. Sal's does a lot of solo stand-up now as well, too. And then I have The Awakening. That literally led to this.
I love this conversation. I want to back up slightly. Was there any incidences? Or?
No, I think mostly because of me. Because I can be, as Sal says, I can be a chore to deal with.
Right.
You know what it is? We just have very different work styles, the four of us. We're four... set men already. You know, we're not in our 20s going through this. We're all in our 40s now. So we have different ways of operating and different styles too. And that, when you work that much with somebody, it can get on your nerves.
Well, I mean, obviously I can relate to that. You know, my old radio show just kind of completely imploded and everyone has sort of gone their own way and stuff. And, you know, we all started on the same page and then you're part of a runaway train and you have personal issues. And you're not really solving the personal issues.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the show you're doing is so successful and it's making you rich and famous. And you feel almost like you're kind of trapped and you don't know what to do. And then, unfortunately, it just, you know, takes its course and just kind of blows up in front of you.
Yeah.
So that's why I asked that question.
Yeah,
but it seems like
you
guys
were
able to avoid some of those landmines.
It's a great question. And I think about that a lot, you know. And I think the way we're avoiding it is it has helped tremendously, us focusing on other things, because it just gives all of us a mental break from thinking about what is 99% of our lives, you know.
Right.
Because if we just thought about that, it would tear us apart, I'm sure.
Right.
But no, we're on good footing now, for sure.
Oh, good for you.
You and Sal had a problem for a while, though, didn't you?
No, I mean, that's played up.
It's
played up on TV. We just, you know what it is? We just have very different styles, you know? He's brilliantly funny. I think, in my opinion, he's the funniest out of the four of us, for sure. He's just brilliantly funny and just fun, and you know? But we have different work styles, and I'm like total type A, and he's more of the thinker. He likes to absorb and think something through and take his time with it. And those two styles don't go well. So I mean, that's from high school on. We've always had that relationship.
Sure.
So it's no worse now than it ever has been. But that being said, I would die for the kid. I love him to death.
Did you ever see Some Kind of Monster, the Metallica documentary?
No.
So they invited a therapist to try to figure out the band's problems.
Yeah.
And at the time, I'm like, this is the dumbest thing ever, right? But then as I was going through my stuff with Anthony and Jim Norton, I'm like, man, maybe we should have got a therapist early on to try to figure some of this stuff out.
We had a moment like that like 2 years ago where we're like, we need to talk things through.
Yeah.
Because it was just over years of working out, you build up these little slights that keep building and building and building.
And
you got to, and nobody wants to, you have so much to do, you don't want to air it. You're like, I got to focus on this. I can't.
Right.
And
right.
then we had like an airing session for like a day, and it reset everything.
Yeah. And did you really marry Sal's sister?
I did, for a day, yeah.
No, for real?
I have a marriage certificate from I went to city clerk's office downtown, next across the street from City Hall.
Now, I know you guys are buds, and I
paid
know
for it with my credit card.
and I know the show is really successful, but did you have someone like away from all that going to make sure you were safe with this whole thing?
Safe?
Safe as in, like, I don't know.
I don't think she has anything. Is that what you mean?
Like, no, but you have a lot. So what I'm saying is you do it for the show as a goof. You're married for a day. Everyone's in on the joke and everyone's cool. But then you fast forward a few years, and somewhere on that paper is this one little line, and she goes to a lawyer, and next thing you know, you're screwed.
Yeah, no.
So what I'm saying is, cover yourself before the prank.
She ain't getting none of my money. No way. Get in line, sister. No way. No, I'm good. I'm safe with that. Yeah. It'd be funny. I make Sal's sister sign a prenup, just a disastrous prenup for her. She gets $100 So
what was the worst thing you had to do? Let me answer first. Yeah. I think getting pushed out of a plane would be the most horrifying, worst thing you could do for Impractical Jokers.
It is, but they did some. I can't tell you what. I'll give you a hint. We just finished shooting the Joker's movie.
Right.
It comes out next year. What they did to me in the movie is 100 times more worse than the skydiving punishment, 100 times more embarrassing than the Danica McKellar, Winnie Cooper punishment, 100 times worse.
Right.
Because I'll give you the basic idea of it.
What about the hair thing?
Where
you had to wear the hair for a year.
That was just awful because I spent 4 months filming a TV show smelling like pot and whiskey, which is what Q smells like.
I'm kidding. A year. Yeah. Come on, you took that crap off when you weren't filming, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. I like that you're being honest.
But the crazy thing is that when they shaved my eyebrows off, I had to live life. It took 3 months for the eyebrows to grow back.
Yeah.
So,
you had to go to a family function, I think, too.
I did, yeah. And there's that the weird middle phase where the eyebrows are, you don't know if whether the eyebrows are coming or going, so people don't know whether I'm getting better or getting worse. You know what I mean? So I feel like commuting on the subway, people are like, is that Murr?
Right.
Oh, he's having a tough time, you know?
Oh, my God.
Is that still your driver's license picture?
Yeah, sure.
Let us see. Come on.
Let me see that.
Yeah, it is.
So being pushed out of a plane, what they do to you in a movie is way worse. Can you give me a little bit of a hint?
Yeah. Oh, shit. I left my license at home.
Oh, don't worry. I have a picture of it here.
Oh, there it is. There it is, yeah.
No way. Is that you?
It is.
Send me that.
So what they did was
that'll be the picture for this episode.
So they
you kidding me?
Obie interviews a Mr. right. Potato Head, worst guest, a very special worst guest edition.
Oh my God! Give me a hint on what they.
I'll give you a hint. So they, I'll say this. You know, we film the movies every day from early morning to late at night. One day on my own personal time, hours after we finished filming, I was doing my own thing in my own real life and did not realize that it was secretly part of the actual movie.
Wow.
So it was something in my real life that was amazing going on and that I had no clue was a setup the whole time for weeks, for months was a setup for the movie.
Oh,
if that gives you a hint.
My God, that gives
you
a great hint.
Could you imagine? That's why I'm so terrified of anything. I was like, yeah, sure. You, this is a real podcast.
Did you ever jump out of a plane before that stuck?
No, and I never will. Well, no, and I never will have before, nor will
I. Can you walk
me
through that again? I know you did it on the old radio show.
Here's the crazy thing. If you remember back to high school when you took physics, gravity is 9.8 meters per second squared, right? That's the rate at which bodies fall.
I knew that. Mike didn't, but I knew
just
that.
Like, you know,
he's a Georgetown guy, of course.
9.8 meters per second squared. When you do the math on that means until the last 2 seconds of skydiving. If you fall from 30 feet up, you die, right? If you fall from 30 feet up, you break everything, you die from 30 feet up. That's 30 feet is like the last 2 seconds of skydiving. These are terrible odds. If anything goes wrong with a parachute, would you ever play those odds in Vegas ever? If you're going to die up until the last 2 seconds?
No.
This is crazy. It's crazy. Anyway, so no, I'll never do it again. I was scared shitless. I was.
Just pushed you out.
And they pushed me out. And I right before I went up, I was crying. I locked myself in the bathroom for a half hour.
Yeah.
I wouldn't come out. And they didn't know whether I'd do it, right? I called my mom and she sent me to voicemail. My own mom, I was like, I called my mom to say I love her, goodbye, in case it doesn't work out. Voicemail.
Was there anything cool about it after you got pushed out?
No.
You didn't enjoy it at all?
No, they said, you're gonna experience this Zen moment when you're floating gently, you'll feel at one with Earth. I was terrified to the moment I was touching soil.
I have no desire to do it, but people that do, I mean, not you, obviously, but they say it's an amazing experience. No.
The one thing that was, I went scuba diving for the first time last summer. And I was terrified because I'm scared. I'm terrified of sharks. Terrified.
Yeah.
At all times. I'm scared of them right now. And I was terrified. But that being said, when I got to the bottom and I looked up and it was crystal clear water, you know, in the Caribbean, and I saw the boat and people floating down with scuba tanks, I was like, holy shit, this is like an outer space.
I would scuba dive every week. I love it. And you realize when you do go scuba diving that everything under the water is pretty much scared shitless of you.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Not the sharks.
Not much comes up to you.
No, yeah, stays away from you. That's true.
Most stay away from you. They don't want anything to do with you. They'll get a little curious, and then they move on quickly. So
yeah.
I used to scuba dive down in Turks and Caicos.
Oh, that's where I was last summer. That's exactly Club where Ed? I took my family to the beaches resort, you know? Because it's
we got to talk.
Why?
How old are your kids?
I don't have kids.
Oh, wait, then no. Why did you go to
no,
beaches?
No, I'm sorry. It was my nieces, nephews, my sisters, my parents.
Okay. All right. Because you're either a father or you're a creep if you're going to beaches.
I go to beaches every summer.
But you went there for your nephews and nieces.
Yeah, I took all the kids and my sisters, my parents.
Me and my wife, we honeymooned down there.
How many kids do you have?
I got two.
Two.
I started at Club Med as a single guy. Then we went to Grace Bay Club.
Grace Bay, yeah, sure.
And then I forgot the place for my honeymoon. It was really exclusive on the far end of the island.
Amaria.
Yeah. Whatever it's called.
Amaria.
And then, you know, we went to beaches, and we could look down the beach to where we used to just be me and her. It was okay, but it's crowded, man.
You could look down at the beach at your past.
Yeah, pretty much. And then you got to fight for a stupid beach chair.
Yeah.
What is that about?
You know.
So I started just leaving my stuff out overnight. You know, a lot of people, they'll set their alarm for 5, 6 in the morning.
That's crazy.
And then what take a sandal and a book and put it on a chair for the day. I'm like, I pay too much money to be competing for a dumb beach chair.
It's crazy, right? That you take that. What are we doing with our lives? That we're like setting an alarm for 5 a.m. on vacation to snag a spot on the beach?
Yeah, exactly.
My.
So then I got the bright idea. I'm like, wait a minute. By 9, 10 o'clock at night when that sun is down, no one is checking these beach chairs. No. So I put it out like it looks like I put it out in the morning. And then I can sleep
in. You should have set an alarm for 4:45, asshole. I was here first. Right. That's it. There you go.
And what else about beaches? Oh, and then they closed the pool because a little kid shit. I wanted to.
That's what we did the other day. We were filming a punishment for Jokers.
Yeah.
I'm kind of. Yeah. Maybe I should. Oh,
no, go.
So I'm filming a punishment for Jokers, and we made one of the guys a lifeguard at this big public swimming pool, and what he had to do was one by one throw everyone out of the pool. You know, so all these kids, it's a packed summer, you know, pool, public pool. Yeah, yeah. And one by one, he's like, hey, get out of the pool for bullying. Get another one, bullying, whatever. Then the parents start revolting because we're throwing their kids out. And then he cleared the whole pool. It was hysterical.
That's
just
awesome.
Ruining summer for everyone.
Yeah. Oh, they cleared it out for the day. I was like, I want some of my money back. That's not my problem that someone else's kid shit in the pool.
Yeah, what do you do, man? I mean, at any given time, pools are full of. And Sal always says it too. It's true. There's around us right now is shit and cocaine everywhere. Right? It's on every dollar bill in your wallet. Yeah. It's on every piece, everybody's shoe, and it's no different when you go to a pool. It's always full of urine. It's 83% urine.
You want a confession today?
Yeah.
So when my son was born, we could still go to the Grace Bay Club. You know, we had one little kid, and you know, he wasn't aware enough where he was like, why are we here when we could be at beaches?
Yeah.
And he had his swim diaper on.
Oh,
and
nice. Dude, you were killing me. Oh my God.
Do you want the confession or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, come on.
Okay. And he let it go, man. He, you know,
and you didn't tell
he
anybody,
wasn't
did
potty
you?
Trained yet. No, I was panicking. I'm like, I can't be the guy that like says my kid just shit in the pool. So I was in full panic mode. She's laughing over there. She's like, you're a terrible person.
You didn't tell anyone. You tell me you didn't tell anyone. You got out of the pool.
I was definitely debating, and it was like sort of like pot roast. It was sort of like
come on,
sort of like stringy. You know what I mean? It wasn't one solid log or anything like in.
So nothing
Shack.
You can do.
And then I'm looking at
you're
this
diffusing
thing.
You're still responsible. Even if it was
I'm
like
looking at this thing, and I'm like, you know, man, we're in the Caribbean. They have a lot of chlorine, and I'm looking at the spot.
What?
And at first, it's definitely yellow and brown, and then it dissipates really quickly.
Yes, so there's nothing you can do.
And
yes.
I'm like, you know what? I think we're good.
And you swam right away from there.
I think we're good.
Hey,
that's the God's honest truth.
Oh my God!
I didn't have the balls to tell.
Yeah,
because I knew it would be a whole
the whole
scene
thing. I mean, hours.
Looking at
you ruined going, vacation for everybody.
You're the reason why we can't be in the pool for the rest of the day. And it's a very exclusive place. They don't have a lot of people there, so they're going to see you a million times.
He didn't want to ruin people's vacation, so instead he gave everyone meningitis or whatever. whatever you catch from
a little pink eye.
Poop in a bowl. Everyone goes home with pink eye.
And then we went to beaches again this past winter. We went to Jamaica.
Yeah, how's that?
That was cool.
Well, that's where beaches started.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a Jamaican guy started the company there,
right.
And then it just grew and grew and spread.
And they smoke pot everywhere.
Yeah.
My God. On the way over here, I was talking about how when you walk around New York City now, pretty much every time you walk around, you'll smell pot now.
Well, they decriminalized it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At this point, what is it? It's like a traffic ticket, basically?
Yeah, basically it's a summons now, unless they have a warrant or something. It's just a summons.
You're on the force right now.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you stationed? What are you?
Oh, I don't. I'll tell you off it.
Brooklyn. Okay, got it.
In Brooklyn. Somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. And do you ever bust anybody for pot?
No. Not really anymore.
Not really.
No more. Not unless it's such a heavy weight, because it wouldn't make sense anymore. You know,
it's not worth your time, literally.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's not worth their time or our time or anything.
Nobody that's high is robbing banks or, you know, they're God, not doing anything. They're you know, what are they doing? They're driving slower. You know?
I think now you're going to, we can get political for a second. I think alcohol is way worse than pot. It always has been.
I agree. It really has.
It's unbelievable.
You know?
Impractical Jokers. What season are you guys up to?
Season 7's on the air. We're back in like 3 weeks. I'm not sure when this airs, but it's August 2nd. We're back on TV.
What can we look forward to?
It's hard
because you can't really talk about it because you want the surprises everybody.
I think we're operating at our best right now. I think the show is really funny.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just new directions. When we come back, we have a celebrity guest. Look at me. Yeah,
you're shedding.
Nerves.
What are you doing?
You're doing the same thing. I
was ripping up some.
I know.
I got recognized on the street, and some lady gave me. That's a sad story too.
Aww.
Just listen to the beginning of the podcast if you're tuning in right now.
Yes, I don't know. It's just some a lady, nervous thing. Not some, nervous. Not even nerves. I just do it all the time. Even when I'm home alone, I do it.
Well, I'll tell you. So I'm walking through Times Square and I'm taping a little bit, just fooling around before, you know, I came here to interview Murr from Impractical Jokers. And this lady gives me the eye like she recognizes me. I'm like, hey, I still got it, right? And so I kind of smile like, that's right, I'm Opie, right? And she goes, I do some work with the Zoom too.
That's it.
So then I'm like, I used to be famous, and then I told her. She goes, I remember you, and then she gave me a card, which I am now ripping up on the podcast.
His last podcast, he told the person, "Hey, Google me." Yeah, that was me. That picture of me. He told someone to Google him.
Well, I mean, you're getting up there too, Murr. I was talking on my podcast. I was in Coscob, which is hoity-toity up there in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Yeah.
I did a podcast from a yacht. And I went into a coffee shop, and I was talking to these three kids. They were cool, rich as fuck.
Yeah.
Never have to work. Their fathers and grandfathers are Wall Street guys. And so they're like 17 or 18, and they're asking me, what's the name of the podcast? I said, Opie Radio. They go, Open Road? And had no idea who I was, right? And so I forced them to Google me live on the podcast.
Oh, God.
And Carl's like, you're embarrassing us. Why are you doing this? I'm like, because I want to do this. Yeah. I want to make everyone uncomfortable. That's what I like doing. And anyway.
Reality check for us. Oh, I'm sorry. No. Reality check for us was Joe and I were like, we finally feel like we're getting some traction. We're on TV, made it, we're getting recognized a little bit.
Yeah.
We come out of Penn Station and these, these two girls, slamming hot, Long Island girls. They got the hair and the accents and the whole thing, right? They come up to us. They see us. They freak out. They're with two dudes that are like, yo, what's up, They come up to us. They go, oh, my God. Oh, it's the guys from the show. And the boyfriends are like, well, what show are you talking about, right? And they go, the Impossible Pranksters. Wednesday nights on Comedy Central. I was like, you have somehow screwed up every detail. Wrong day, wrong title, wrong network, everything.
Right.
And that was a reality check for us. And then we realized we're not that famous.
Well, the funny thing is, as I was setting up here, there's only two guys in this whole bar because we clear out this level so we could have some peace and quiet. Tell Murr what happened, Mike.
So the bartender's dealing with the last two guys, and he's like, Opie's over there. So the guy looks at me and goes, you're Opie? I'm like, no. I'm like, Opie's over there. He walks over. He goes, Ope, I'm a huge fan. He's like, you still on the radio? Ope's like, no. He goes, you still work with Anthony? Ope's like, not for the last three years.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm doing a podcast now. And Ope goes, you listen to podcasts? He goes, no.
Yeah.
Ope's like, hey, check it out. He goes, I'm a big fan, though.
But he's big a fan. Huge fan.
No, he's a huge fan.
Yeah, huge fan, but he has no idea what I've been up to the last three or four years. But anyway, but then I was thinking with these kids in the coffee shop, man, when I had my heyday, they were newborns. They're only 18.
Yeah, sure.
They're 17, 18 years old. So,
of course.
What are you
going to
do?
What do you do?
Did you guys ever get close to getting hit?
I'm the only one that got hit.
Oh, you actually got hit?
Yeah, I got not in a heart or anything like that. It was a big guy. I mean, he was well over 6 feet, but three times my size, too. Probably weighed close to 300 pounds, right? He's shopping, and you know, a lot less, the kind of discount store in New York City. He's shopping a lot less. They have these bins of jeans. You know, you free floating jeans. You know, just rummage through. Like, it's, I don't know what it is. There's no structure or stuff. This is the, goes against the very nature of sales in stores, right? It's just bins of loose clothing, textiles, loose textiles in a bin. He's looking through, and the guy's told me to shop over him. So, like, if this is you, I'm reaching over this guy for more jeans, and I'm pulling jeans right in front of his face. So he feels disrespected, right? So I'm pushing, and I feel like I gotta back off. The guys run up to me, the biggest bra I've ever seen in my life. It's size Z, right? And he said, Murr, go up to the guy, and you're not allowed to speak, and hold the bra up to his chest. So what they've done is they've taken away any possible bullshit I can come up with.
Of course.
And I said to them on camera, I was like, guys, this guy's, I'm telling you, he's gonna pop if I do this. I you can sense it, you know? Because he already feels disrespected. Now I'm pushing the trigger of sexuality, right? He's going to feel emasculated. So you can't say anything. It's like, all right. So I go up to him. As soon as I lift the bra up and I don't say a word, he takes out his cell phone, whacks me on the face with his cell phone. My face blows up immediately. I mean, you know how hard it is if you get hit by a, you know? And whacks me in the face, comes at me. Security runs over. They couldn't stop him. I ran. He chased me like a goddamn ferret. Ran throughout the whole store. I ran into the basement, but I won the challenge.
I assume you guys got security helping you out a little bit, too, right?
Yeah. We have one security guard who's usually texting.
I got to ask, how was playing Madison Square Garden?
It was, well, I mean, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, we did a show in the city. Two people bought tickets to see us perform. Two people. And they were students of mine. I used to teach improv and sketch, you know? Two people bought tickets. They spent $5 a ticket. The theater cost us $65 to rent for the night, so we lost $55. And at the end of the night, we're like, God, shit, what are we going to do? We got to split the $55 loss, right? And then so 12 years later, to sell out the Garden, and there's only been a handful. You can count them on two hands how many comedians have ever sold the Garden.
That's quite an accomplishment.
It was, dude, I took the subway to the show at the Garden.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
The 2-3 train is right there, right from where I live. So I took the 2-3 train. I'm in my suit. I come out of the subway on 7th Avenue, and I walk up the stairs, and I'm like, you know what, let me go live. I'm kind of arriving at Madison Square Garden, and I go live, and I'm walking down the block, and I look up, and I see the side of the Garden has our face on it, and it says sold out. And within half a second, tears start streaming down my face. I had to end the thing immediately. I was in full-blown tears. It took me like 20 minutes to recover from that moment, because I was just like, man, I'm getting chills thinking about it now. It's just the dream come true, you know, to go from the lowest to that moment.
Right.
It's amazing.
Wow, you're really tearing up. That's
awesome. It's just, I'm getting goosebumps.
I like real moments on this thing. So it's just,
unbelievable. And to have my family there, my parents still alive and everything's good, you know, it's just like.
Right. You lost special. Your parents?
No, they're still here, but, you know, they're still.
Oh, okay. Okay, I got it. Wow, sorry.
That's got real quick. Yeah. Oh my God,
they're still here. They're doing great.
Okay,
so
that's a hell of a moment, though.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Yeah. The best of moments.
Yeah, so. I was on that stage once
with Dice. Didn't you sold it out with Andrew Dice Clay?
Did you?
He didn't sell it out because the Mets and
The World Series.
Was it Mets Yankees?
I think it was Subway Series in 2000. I believe
Subway Series, right? The only reason I'm saying this is to give you a chance to compose yourself.
Yeah.
I don't mean to take your Madison Square Garden moment away, but you got upset there. So.
You were up there with Dice? No kidding.
Well, I mean, we had a really good relationship with Dice, and he sold out the Beacon Theater. His head was a little too big because he sold out a whole bunch of shows at the Beacon Theater, and then was trying to sell out Madison Square Garden. Pretty much the same weekend or very, very close. And we're all like, you're crazy.
That's hard.
And then there was the Mets and the Yankees were in the World Series.
That kills you.
And so he allowed us to go on stage before him. And just looking around at Madison Square Garden,
it's unbelievable, right? There's nothing like it.
What the hell is this? And then, you know, we had to come up with a quick bit. So we're like, how many Mets fans? How many Yankees fans? And I'm like, do you think we could get along? Right, booing. I'm like, I think we could get along. Boo! Next thing you know, we go, ladies, come on out. And there's a really hot girl in a Mets jersey and a really hot girl in a Yankees jersey. Yeah. And they liked kissing each other. And the place
everybody got along.
And the place went nuts.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
I'm only telling that story because you were blubbering. People are going to be like, why are you making about your shit?
I wasn't blubbering.
I'm kidding.
I said I got chills. It's fun. I cried a little too. I told you. I have the emotions of a scurried little animal.
That's nothing wrong with that, though. Endo, what's going on, buddy? Thanks for having me back at Jack Dempsey's. He owns this place.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good to see you. Actually, I saw you a couple of months ago.
Oh, yeah.
I was walking down the street and I saw you in Jack's.
Oh, yeah.
Good. And another clown had a kid on a leash or something. Or you were trying to put him into that.
That's where the story is, where the guy hit me in the face.
Are you kidding me?
It was not Lawless. It was Jack's.
Oh, really?
I was just walking by and I noticed that you were behind the curtain. I saw the curtain, the whole camera.
Yeah.
Figured. So he tried to, your buddy tried to coax me in. He was saying,
oh,
well, listen, give me a hand to help me out. Help me out. I said, great show, by the way, guys.
He said, go on.
Where in Ireland are you or your family from?
Right in the middle, a place called Longford.
Oh, sure. Longford. My family's from Cork.
Okay, very good. Great to have you guys do a great show.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having
us. Actually, my wife's cousins are out from Ireland at the moment, and I was saying that you were coming in this evening, and they watch you in Ireland all the time. Ireland all the time.
Yeah,
they said it's hilarious. They love it.
Yeah, the show's bigger there than it is here.
They love the show.
You got fans all over the world.
That's fantastic. The show's real big in the UK, big in
Ireland, obviously.
Ireland, of course.
Ireland, UK, and then huge in Australia. But India is our number one market.
Wow.
India?
Yeah, we got so much fan mail from it.
That is cool.
Yeah.
That's like their daughter is 16 and she knows every one of you by name.
No kidding.
And she said, wow, who's coming? And she said,
that's wild.
That's crazy, like that you know.
Yeah. Have you been to India?
No, we're planning on next year for the first time going on tour. So I'm going to be there. The book Awakened comes out in India this fall. And I'm going there coincidentally for my college roommate's wedding. So they're going to launch the book when I'm there so I can do all press and everything like that.
So that's your college roommate's getting married in India?
Yes, who's Indian.
You got to go to the Rat Temple.
The what?
The Rat Temple.
What's
Mike
that?
Knows. So Morgan Spurlock is a friend of mine, does the documentaries, and he did a documentary on rats. It's so worth watching.
Rats, the animal?
Rats. And I don't want to give it's basically the rats of New York and the dogs that hunt the rats. And there's clubs in New York City. Do you know about the clubs, Mike?
No,
there are clubs in New York City where they take their, I think, their terriers, and they meet in the middle of the night, and they hunt rats.
What? This is a thing?
Yeah, for sport.
Do you know how much I've learned? Do you know how much I've learned this hour? Seriously, mobile. I know how to sneak into places. The Chrysler Building. And I'm knowing that people hunt rats at night.
Yeah.
What is this?
And the one I'll give away. So then he goes to India, and there's a temple where they think rats are sacred, and there's thousands upon thousands. I don't know how many. It's just ridiculous because the footage in the movie Rats, the documentary by Morgan Spurlock, it's off. It's just ridiculous.
That's if you're a rat, that's Disney World for you, right?
And they
feed them and
they take care of them, and people are walking in the temple with rats all over the place. They're not. The rats aren't. You got a clip for them?
No. I'm watching a clip of just rats running free.
They worship them there. They worship these rats here.
Not in all of India, but this obviously.
Do you remember
this certain temple? Yes.
You remember what I talked about before about these people living their lives in the down in the sewers and subways?
Yeah.
These people, there are people living their lives just in worshiping rats.
And they're walking through with their families, and the rats are running all around their feet.
That's they're like, what are we going to do today? Oh, let's go worship rats.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what do you want to do tomorrow? How about we go worship more rats?
Right.
Hey, clear Saturday and Sunday because we're going to go back to worshiping rats.
Right. Well,
that's their choice.
So when you go to your buddy's wedding, why don't you try to search out the rat temple?
Yeah, I will.
I'm serious.
I'll give him tickets for his wedding.
I would go. I would check that out.
Well, rats
are
very good pets, I hear.
Yeah.
From no one.
No one's ever said that.
I'll take your word on that. Yeah. So then the movie comes out next year.
Movie comes
awesome.
Out next spring.
Madison Square Garden was awesome. And now you guys are going to travel the world next
year?
Yeah. God, that is so cool.
Yeah, we're hitting next year. We're planning on hitting. We'll be back in the UK touring. We did last year. We did 5 nights sold out at the O2.
Wow.
Which is bigger than the Garden.
That's crazy. That's
five nights. It was crazy. So we, and then the movie, and then of course the trilogy of Awakened. And next summer is the book number 2. The summer after that is book number 3.
Yeah, and the book is doing very well.
Thank you.
Congratulations
yes.
on that. And I also want to mention you're going to be in Sharknado.
I am. I can't believe the guy. So they tried to get us on like 2 years ago, and the schedule didn't work out. But I'm a huge Sharknado fan because it's just so batshit crazy, right? The idea. So I was like, you know what? And the time came around again. They're like, we're going to be in New York. Can you do it? And I was the only one that jumped out. I was like, F yeah, I want to do it. That's amazing. It was so much fun. Because they have a giant green screen. There's nothing. There's no set. There's no sharks. There's no nothing.
Yeah.
It's just, they literally said to me, go ahead, you got an hour, go. And I was like, that's the guidance? And that's all they said. And they said, here's the gist of what we want. Do whatever you want for an hour until we got to get to the next thing. And I just riffed and improvised anything I wanted for an hour. And that's in the movie.
Oh, my God.
It's crazy.
That's so cool, man.
I've never seen anything like that in my life.
When is that coming out?
I think this fall it comes out. Okay. Just, yeah, not too long, like 2 months from now.
But Awakened, I can't wait to read the book.
I'm going to get you a copy tomorrow.
Well, I can buy it.
No. Come on. You, as I said from the beginning, you've been very kind to us for years, since day one. That means a lot. The guys and I are, you know, we're styling guys. We're guys that believe in loyalty and friendship.
Right,
you've been a gentleman to us from day one and supportive of us. And that means a lot to me. So I can't thank you enough.
Can you cry as you say that?
Well, yeah, I'm getting
So you sold out Madison Square Garden. Can you tell us about that again?
Yeah. No, James.
Thanks for having me on the Worst Of podcast. That's great.
Yeah. No.
The worst
no,
of, the
no,
worst,
no.
worst guest episode.
And I'm calling you James because you're an author now. James S. Murray, also known as Murr from Impractical Jokers. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks,
back
man.
And do this
Thank
again.
You for having me. I appreciate it.
You're enjoying your summer?
Doing anything? Very much so.
Are you doing anything?
Yeah, we're working. We're working my ass off.
So that's not enjoying your summer.
Yeah, you know. We're going to Comic-Con next week. That's going
to
be fun.
Okay, because Westwood One wants me to do more, and I'm like, I'm enjoying my summer. In the fall, I'll do this, like, you know, way more for you.
Yeah, well, I'm going to Turks and Caicos again, taking the family beaches in 2 weeks.
Are you really?
Yeah.
You're going right back to the same place?
Yeah, same place. It's good. It's handicapped accessible, which is good for my dad. It's great for the kids. Everybody's happy.
Did you get the butler?
My sister brought that up. I don't know what that is. What do I do? She said, did you get the butler? I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
You get a guy.
You get a guy.
It's a little weird, though, because it's a black guy. A little weird, I'm not going to lie.
It feels weird.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
You end up doing more stuff for yourself because you feel bad.
Yes, that's 100% right, because everyone said you got to get the butler for beaches because the time of year you're going, it's way too crowded. This guy could get you into the restaurants, cut all the lines. He'll get you the cabanas and all this stuff.
All right.
But it's 100 degrees, and he's dressed basically in a tuxedo like he's going to a wedding, and you feel really bad for the guy, and and the sweat is just pouring off him, and then he's black, and then you're thinking, this is not right.
It feels wrong. Yeah, but it's equally wrong to request a white butler. You know, that's doubly wrong. That feels worse. You know,
you're 100% right, because then I'm thinking, if he's white, would I feel as bad? It's just a whole thing.
Yeah.
We got along with our butler, though. He's really, really cool.
Yeah.
So enjoy beaches.
Thank you, sir.
Enjoy the rest of your summer. Can't wait to see the movie next year. The book is called Awakened. It's Murr from Impractical Jokers.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. We did it!
That was awesome. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening and supporting our podcast for Westwood One. Don't forget to pick up Awakened, a novel, now on Amazon, or wherever you get your books, like Moby Dick by Herman Melville. Keep a lookout for the next season of Impractical Jokers, and follow James Murray on all social media for more. Like this episode? Write a comment at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating. Share it with a friend. And remember to buy something at opradio.com. You can't go wrong with a shirt or a hat. Show your love for this free entertainment. Check out past episodes you may have missed, like Carl Ruiz talking about beer on episode 2 and 19. Episodes 1 and 3 even features Carl's creepy cabin. There's that comprehensive interview that Opie did with Robert O'Neill, American hero and Navy SEAL, on Ep 11, or even the two episodes before this one, recorded on a yacht. In fact, take a few days, grab your favorite poison, and binge away. Catch up on every episode of Opie Radio from the Westwood One Podcast Network.